This podcast is supported by The Real Real. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The Real Real.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The Real Real? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The Real Real than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The Real Real. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
So one of the other random things about you was that I remember we were at Denny's up in Anchorage or somewhere in Alaska, and I remember you used to love like milkshakes. And is that right? Am I remembering this correct?
I did.
But
I love milkshakes.
But you're like lactose intolerant.
I'm lactose, man.
And so
I am, dude. It crushes.
So I remember you just like crushing a milkshake and like giving yourself like brain freezes or whatnot, and you're just like, you're like maybe 5 minutes after you're done with the last sip or whatever, you know, last spoonful of your milkshake, you're like, your stomach was like rumbling, and you're like, I remember the look on your face. But then I remember thinking like, I love milkshakes. I didn't say anything. I was like, I love milkshakes in my head. And then I remember thinking the same thing. Like after I'm done with a milkshake, like my stomach hurts. So I never like put it together. Like maybe I was lactose. Like, and my stomach like would really hurt too. Not like a, you know, like a little, like little pain. It was like, you know, like there was a little war going on inside of me. But yeah, that's...
Oh, yeah. I don't even drink milk anymore, really. And very rare. Maybe I'll have a bowl of cereal with the kids or something. But man, it just,
yeah,
it does not settle well with me. But I love milkshakes so much. A little, you know, dairy queen or whatever, and I'll grab them with the kids, and it's worth the pain. Have a good milkshake.
I agree. No, so I switched over to almond milk after, or I'm sorry, soy milk after that, and then recently to almond milk. So I don't do a whole lot of dairy anymore either. But
home state ball is yes we ball.
Come on,
home state ball is yes we ball.
Get a
home state. Home state ballers, home state, home state ballers, home state ballers, yes we ball.
Come on,
home state ballers, yes we ball.
Get a
home state, home state ballers, home state, home state ballers.
Hold up, let me strap on my Nike cleats, 'cause the next man coming is at 90 feet. Yeah, they on my high bound from the top of the Pac-10, stepping in the box, tugging on my black brim.
Okay.
And if you're thinking that your team can challenge, the road to the World Series runs through Corvallis.
You know.
And don't be mad, 'cause they got your team shook. Just ask USC how that ring look. And that cannon on cannon got them sweating. Ain't nobody stealing, everybody setting guessing. It's a weapon, just like when I'm spitting gas, y'all. Swinging and you missing when Ed throw the fastball. And Nickerson got them giving in, they ain't even swinging at the third strike.
Nope.
It goes right by. So bring Gundy in to close out, 'cause everybody gon' know about
who?
Them O-State ballers.
O-State ballers, yes we ball.
Come on,
O-State ballers, yes we ball.
Get a
O-State, O-State ballers, O-State, O-State ballers, O-State ballers, yes.
yes, we ballin'. Home state ballers, yes, we ballin'. Home state ballers, home state, home state ballers.
Hitting all the jacks, ain't no time to relax. Home state baller game never lacks. Yeah. Melting ladies' hearts like a flame to wax. We step to the plate and we taking the hacks. Come on. So far ahead, all you see is our backs. Throwing facts, busting tracks, ain't no tax, wearing slacks. Tearing up players with mad skilled attacks. Ballers title bound and we counting the stacks. We be the ones ripping, tearing at your little chest. We forever teaching D's and taming duck on test. Ripping from the 858 to the 425. Busting up beaver tails while you taking a dive. Got K, Spencer Lee's leading the way. Bombs getting dropped with no delay. Leave the field in a hurry, that's in our forte. 400 to the fence, boom, all day.
Home state ballers, yes, we ballin'. Home state ballers, yes, we ballin'. Home state ballers, home state ballers. Home state ballers, yes, we ballin'. Home state ballers, yes, we ballin'. Home state ballers, home state ballers.
It's an old state baller type thing. My homie Mitchie slick behind the plate, catch a ring. You a fool if you thinking you gon' give him the one. Back cock, back vision lock, ready to run. And I know it might seem a little bit strange, but this ain't petty, homie, it's a serious game. Passion glowing like the light from a flick of a flame. Ain't nothing sicker than seeing the 3-1 shot, breaking the pain and heartache from seeing your team lose. But this is old state, you know how we do. Yeah, come on. And this is for the fans, cheering for the home team, knowing they the man. The beef is in demand, you can see it in the stands. When they get up out their seats and they throwing up their hands, it's all official because the missile is gone. Mitchie Slick ran a third after dropping the bomb.
Home state ballers, yes, home state ballers. Home state ballers, yes, we ballin'. Home state ballers, yes, we ballin'. Home state ballers, home state ballers.
Arizona, this is how the ring look. ASU, this is how the ring look. California, this is how the ring look. UCLA, this is how the ring look. USC, this is how the ring look. UW, this is how the ring look. Wazoo, this is how the ring look. Stanford, this is how the ring look. And Texas, you're about to get your ring took. And it's on.
Guys, I know that was a long intro, but we had to play that little throwback from the 2005 College World Series champions, Oregon State. Oregon State's baseball team put that little track together, so I had to put that up, and that was led by our guest today, Mitch Canham, the head coach at Oregon State.
I really hope you guys listened to this one in its entirety. Coach Canham and his story and how he rose in the game as a player, then as a coach and in college, and then the professional levels, and now back as the head coach at Oregon State. You know, the story he has and the influence he has on the players and the people around him is second to none. So please take the time to listen through this one, and we'll get back to you with another track at the end. Hey, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of the Locked In Baseball Podcast. And I'm really excited to share with you and, you know, our guest who is just an amazing guy and a, you know, one of the best baseball minds on the West Coast in college sports. And his name is Mitch Canham, and he's entered into his first year of being the head coach at Oregon State University. But I mean, I can't say enough good things about this guy. You know, I've known him for years, but you know, I hadn't seen him since we played college summer ball back in, what was it, like 2005, 2006. And, and you know, just getting reconnected with him over the last year has been really cool. And just, you know, Mitch, thanks for being with us, man. I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you got, you know, tons of stuff to do and you're super busy. So thanks again.
No, love it. I'm glad we get to connect. That's been an exciting, about a year now since we really ran into each other and started connected again. I remember going down to Arizona and seeing you get after it and coaching, and brought me back to 2005 when you and I were playing together up in the Alaska League.
Yeah, that was a great time, man. That was an experience I'll never forget. I probably, you know, probably enjoyed it too much, but it was you know, getting to know you down there and in Cap, you know, and the guys and watching those, you know, a lot of those guys succeed,
you know, some of those guys, you know, played a long time. Well, I mean, remember Danny? Is he still playing Valencia? Do you know?
Valencia, hey, I'm not sure if he's still playing. Haven't been following, but I mean, he had. I remember Cap actually, McKay was talking yesterday. I watched a clip of him talking about mental skills yesterday, and Andy told me up in that league. He goes, "You see that guy over there? Like, what, Danny?" He goes, "Yeah, he's going to be a big leaguer someday." I said, "Yeah, I agree." And he goes, "You're going to be a good coach someday." I was like, "Oh, that's
kind of you." that's not what you want to hear at the time, you know. But but yeah, man. I mean, getting on these podcasts with all these different guys and you know different walks of life in the game and you know lower division coaches and you know pro guys and everybody's. You know, everybody has had, you know, a pretty, you know, cool but different playing experience. So, you know, I'd like to, you know, just spend a little time talking about you and you know, your career as a player and then how you kind of rose into coaching and how that's all evolved into where you're at now. I mean, if you don't mind, I mean, I know we talked about it a little bit off the record.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I really, you know, it's just something when I was around you, I kind of watched what you did a lot. You know, I mean, I know that maybe, you know, I didn't realize it at the time, but I kind of watched guys and, you know, even though you guys were my, you know, my peers, I looked up to, you know, certain guys I thought that did things the right way and went about their business the right way. So I kind of always knew you were going to do a lot in the game, you know, and you've created an impact so far. So, but if you can touch on that for a little bit, you know, and just kind of tell us about, you know, your journey in baseball and how you got here.
Sure. And you know, it's funny is I watched you play very closely as well. And I picked up a lot of base running secrets from watching you terrorize pitchers and catchers on the bases, talking about a ground ball in the six hole and you're standing on second base. Like, how did Joe get there, man? And then, you know, stealing third on the toss back from the catcher. I said, you do that a few times. This guy, he is locked in as it can be when it comes to the game. So I appreciate that piece, but I also got a ton from you guys. I know many others did as well. So really in high school, I was more of a football and wrestling guy. And the baseball stuff, it just kind of clicked. It was my junior summer, and I had gotten a phone call. And they asked me if I wanted to come down and play on the select summer ball tournament. Because one of the guys had got hurt. They said, "You ever played first base?" I said, "No, but I will." Like, okay, good. You're going to come down. You're going to play first for us. We got a glove for you. So I went down to Corvallis and showed up, played first base, hit a ball off the scoreboard, hit a ball in the opposite field gap. I stole a couple. I mean, I had the best weekend of baseball that I had had in my life up to that point. And it just all clicked. And, you know, we ended up getting into a scuffle with this other team from up north. And I remember Dan Spencer coming down and he goes, "Hey, you know, you want to be a beam?" Like, what do you mean? to do what? And he's like, "Play baseball." And I was, "Oh, yeah." And it's just like it clicked right there. Having someone, there's a lot more to that piece, but having someone that thought, you know, they expressed interest in me, that said I was good enough, that said he believed in me and continued to communicate with me. And I was like, you know what, maybe this football thing, maybe I can do it. And I started to get really good. I bought in and I started working really hard and then saw it start to pay off more and more. And I started to understand the mental game a little bit. I remember my senior high school, I was started off, I think I was like 1 for 25 or something. It was bad. And everyone was looking at me like, "Oh, this guy supposed to go to a Division I school? Terrible. Senior came and hey, you're ever going to go, everyone who goes to big time school, you know, in high school, they're hitting like 600 or something." And I remember Dan Spencer came over and watched one of the games and he goes, "Hey, I don't care if you get a hit the rest of the year. You're going to come to Oregon State. You're going to be a beef." And I was like, sure. He was like, "Hey, I believe in you. Don't forget that. There's a lot of people that believe in you." And you should believe in yourself. And I kind of gave myself a little credit right there, backed off. And to be honest, I don't know how many times I got out the rest of the year. Not many. And, you know, it just, that also showed me that part of pouring into other people, how important it was, and to be a friend, to be a coach, a mentor to others, just, you know, paying attention to them and showing them that you care. So went on to Oregon State and came in, and we had a very tight group of guys. I mean, we still to this day are very close. Everybody from that 05, 06, 07, you know, span, going to the College World Series the first year and then winning it the following 2 years in 6 and 7. It was an exciting time, but you know, the way that we went about our business each and every day, everything was, we know what we want, and we want to go win this thing. We want to bring trophies home. And we held each other accountable every single day to those things. So it didn't matter how we walk, talk, act, we were focused on winning a national championship each and every day. And, you know, from there, ended up, I came into Oregon State as an outfielder, you know, as a possible outfielder, maybe corner infield guy. And then having a couple surgeries, came back and like, you know what? Let's throw you behind the plate. We've seen you play third base, and we feel bad for your chest because you got bruises all over you from wearing it. So let's put a chest protector on you, and then you can block all the baseballs you want. I caught on to it well. I mean, like, tried catching every single bullpen I possibly could to get to the pitchers and work on receiving, and you know, ended up even in the supplemental round in 07 with the Padres. Played a handful of years all over the minor leagues, and after I finished up, I got a call from Andy McKay. Hey, how would you like to start coaching? I said, yeah, I think that's about that time. And I mean, it was with the Mariners organization, being from the Northwest, growing up loving the Mariners. I had a locker right next to, you know, Dan Wilson and Alvin Davis. I mean, I'm in heaven. I'm sitting there with Mariner legends, that guys that I look up to. And so just a perfect scenario of, you know, finishing up my career playing wise, 15 surgeries, a lot of small ones, a couple big ones, but spent a lot of time on the BL and, you know, going in down this coaching road. I remember sitting back and writing down everything from every coach I ever had, the positives, you know, the things that I thought, could improve, and trying to just formulate the best version of myself. This is a new craft, right? When I started catching, it was, I didn't know what I was doing. So I just dove into it, you know. How do you block? How do you throw to second? How do you build that relationship? How do you game call?
Can I interrupt really fast on that too? Because I remember when you were kind of thrown into the mix behind the plate, and I think it was that summer, I believe, when we were in Anchorage. And I mean, you had a difficult time for a while. I mean, but. Your attitude about it though was like, I remember standing at shortstop or second or wherever I, you know, Cap decided to put me that day. But I just remember standing there thinking like, man, like I can do this. Like I would be pissed if I were, you know? And I just remember like, you just kind of took everything with a grain of salt because I think you were so process oriented, even, I mean, way more than I think I was as a player at the time. And, you know, you just, everything you did, you had a good attitude about, man. And I remember that. And I wanted to highlight that. That was like one of the random things. There's a couple other random things I remember about you, but I just remember, you know, that part and thinking like, man, and then watching you guys go, I think we played you in a regional the next year, when I was at Hawaii, and then you guys kicked their ass, which, you know, some teams kicked their ass. And then, then you guys go on and win the national champ. I remember watching you there and then watching you like, continue to
dude, you the jumps you made as a catcher between the summer of 05 and then it was 06, right? And then the spring of 06, or, you know, going into the summer of 06, was like, was unbelievable. Was I've never seen anybody at that time seen anybody improve at anything as well as you improved between, you know, in that year span. So, I mean, that always stuck with me.
Well, I appreciate that. It definitely, I tried taking the process approach to it. Is what are my goal, like, gains for the day? It's just try to get better. The first game I caught at Oregon State, I caught Dallas Buck, and I had not caught many of his bullpens up to that point. I don't even know if I caught one, to be honest with you. And I'm in the game, so we're on Goss, and I felt like I wasn't playing baseball. I was running cross country to the backstop. And Dallas struck. It was like the fourth inning, and Dallas struck out four guys that inning because my thumb was falling off with his sinker, and was, you know, strike three, balls in the backstop. You know, not even on bad pitches. I wasn't used to that movement. And Coach Case comes out, and so did another catcher, and I was out of the game. I remember sitting there, and I was like, "Well, I'm gonna get." I mean, don't get me wrong. I was extremely upset, you know, that I was not prepared, but it was, let's get back to work. And, you know, what are you going to do, sit around and mope? No, man, I want to catch. Give me more bullpens. Next time Dallas throws, yeah, I want to catch. Next time we got the velo machine going, I want to catch it. You know, scoot closer. Continue the challenge. There's that. I wasn't happy being, like, in that comfortable mode. Now, the Lord has blessed me with a ton of wonderful people to push me to, you know, work harder and smarter and encourage me. And he also blessed me with, you know, tons of opportunity. And at one point I used to call it hardship, but I look at it all as opportunity now. It's God giving us a chance to get stronger mentally, physically, emotionally. And, you know, having gone through all that stuff, I was ready to put up a fight to get better. And I kept asking, you know, hey, whatever I'm here for, just, you know, use me as that, use me and just let, guide me towards what it is you want me to do in life. And I think it's very clear to me now is that's coaching, that's mentoring others and pouring into the community of where I'm at. And we do that as a family. And, you know, I mean, there's so many great examples of people that just continue to learn. Kenneth Swanson. Right? Never caught. But he's one of the best catching coaches there is. Mm-hmm. And not just catching coaches, but all around. I mean, he's coaching in the big leagues right now at the Yankees. Yeah. You know, who is that? He's coaching, you know, Division I baseball and was an infielder, and but dove into something and it just shows. And you put your mind to something and you start really getting after it. It's not instantaneous. Everything takes time, and just because you put in all the work doesn't mean this big idea in your head's ever going to happen. That's why it truly is the joy is in the journey, right, and the people you meet along the way, and those friendships. And I mean, right now my family and I, like I said, we're sitting up in the hills right now. We went on a little family trip, and there ain't a whole lot of anything out here, but this is the fun part, is being able to get away from everything and relax and learn how to breathe, right?
Yeah, that's definitely
an important part of the.
Yeah. I was going to say, there's definitely blessings.
Important piece of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely blessings going on.
All around, man.
Yeah. So,
that got me here.
Yeah. Well, I, and then also briefly, you know, I know we're kind of taking our time with some of these things, but, briefly, you know, your experience with, you know, playing under Coach Casey, you know, Coach Pat Casey, yeah, who's, you know, a legendary college coach in my books. I mean, probably most people's books. And, you know, the successes you guys had as a program when you were, as a player, and you know, beyond, you know, even obviously after you were gone and you went on to bigger and better things. But the success he's had as a coach at Oregon State over, you know, the better part of two decades. Or how long was he there? Was he longer? Was he there for
24 years?
24 years. So two and a half decades. So the successes he's had, you know, it was 3 national championships, 2 back to back. You know, with you as a converted catcher behind the plate for year one, you know, and I mean, just, and I, you know, I knew a few of the guys there. I grew up with Dale Solomon, right? Yeah, I'm sure you remember him. Mm-hmm. And Eric Ammon was at UH with me for a year and came back. And just, I mean, all these guys were just solid individuals, you know, and, you know, obviously Darwin Barney turned out to be pretty special and, you know, a lot of those other guys turned out to be really good. And, but I mean, with, what was it like being around, you know, not just a coach, but a man like Coach Casey, leading the helm there?
Yeah, Case, well, everyone knows he's special. I think we are very fortunate, those of us that really get to spend time with him. The people he brings in and how consistent he is with his message, and he is genuine with his beliefs. And it is, you know, literally everything you do, you're competing. He is one of the most competitive people I've ever been around. Doesn't matter what you're doing. He is out to fight and win. But, you know, at the same time, this man cares about developing men. And he pours, I mean, him and his family, they all pour into the community, the student athletes that come through there. And again, it wasn't just instantaneous success when he got there. I mean, I remember looking at all of the photos from where the program was, the people that were there, what the field looked like and the facilities, and watching the growth that's happened since, you know, Coach Case has come to the program. And, you know, it's a blessing to still have him be right there on campus, working in the athletic department, and, you know, he only lives a few blocks from campus too. And, you know, he's a life changer. He's not a game changer. He's a life changer. And, you know, even to this day, you know, he cares so much about the student athletes. He cares so much about the game. And he's a strong man of faith as well. So everything he does, you know, you can't help. Every time we'll sit down and eat dinner, and, you know, there'll be a handful of us sitting down eating, when Case talks, eyes are glued on him, and everyone drops what they're doing, and it's just like soaking it up. And it's almost like, you know, when people look like they're catching flies, their mouth wide open, they're just sitting there in that awe face every time Case is talking about anything in life, you know. And I remember him talking to us coming in and just, hey, it's not just practicing like a champion. It's waking up like a champion. It's eating lunch like a champion. It's shaking a man's hand like a champion. Like everything that you do, you're doing at an elite level all day, every day. Is it easy to do? No. Is it the right thing to do? Yes. And it takes practice. It takes, you know, just a conscious effort to be present in the moment and be elite at it all day, every day. So millions of takeaways from him. I still, you know, I look up to him tremendously. He is a huge mentor of mine, and throughout my playing career, or even the last several years, you know, coaching, I'd reach out to him and just talk about whether it's in-game stuff or I talk to him about life stuff. And he's always there for me, and I know he's always there for many, many others too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been around good coaches too, but I mean, there's men like Pat Casey, and you just know they're different. You know, they're, you know, he's yeah, you know, wired just a little bit differently than most others. And, you know, anybody come in contact with guys like that, even if it's just for a brief moment, you know, you guys are, you know, very, you know, very fortunate, especially if you get to spend, you know, time, you know, years, you know, underneath him, and be able to watch how he is, you know. So, yeah, man, I really appreciate, you know, you sharing that. So, I mean, now you're at Oregon State, you know, you're the head coach there now, you know, and to me, I thought, you know, nobody better. You know, you're like the epitome. You're almost like the mascot there. You know what I mean? Like back in the day, you were like the guy. You know, like who's the mascot of Oregon State? You're like, oh, it's Mitch. And no, but so tell me, you know, how was the transition from from pro ball to not just a college job, but the head coaching job at one of the most prestigious college programs in the country? You know, coming off a College World Series win 2 years ago, you know, coming off a good run last year, to me it was a little startling that Casey decided, hey, you know, I'm going to hang it up. But you know, tell me about, you know, that transition for you and how it's been and you know, the experience you've had so far.
Well, the time with the Mariners was tremendous. I was fortunate that not only being around, you know, people I looked up to since I was a kid, but I got a lot of experience in the with the scouting department. I had a lot of experience within the analytics department. And great folks in PD, our athletic trainers, and strength coaches. So really, each and every day, it was communicating with somebody else who knew a ton more than me, and I'm just trying to soak it all up little by little. I mean, I came out of there. I every day, my glass just felt completely full. Mm-hmm. So it helped me go to sleep at night. I was like, man, I'm learning so much, and I got great people around me, and we're getting after them playing baseball. So the learning curve was pretty strong. And, you know, even though I hadn't been at Oregon State since 2007, I mean, like just physically on campus each and every day, I mean, I've always been there. I love it. And always keeping up with the program, come back and visit and meet with the guys and check in. I mean, that community transformed my life. So while I was gone, I always felt there. And I already talked to, Andy McKay when I first took the job, and I had to let him know, I'm going to be a Mariner unless this one opportunity opens up. There's one opportunity out there that I love, and I would jump on in a heartbeat if I had the opportunity. That's going to Oregon State. And the state community, our kids, Mac and Maya, it's like a parent's dream. They say, hey, we're going to go outside and play. And they're like, you know, you go to some cities, you don't want your kids going outside and playing or nothing like that. But they just run outside. They're playing with all the kids in the neighborhood. They're riding bicycles. They're making ramps and just having a good time. And you feel safe in that community. What a great place to raise a family. What a great place to build relationships with people and help one another. So that transition, like going back to Oregon State, was so much more than just baseball. Now, no doubt this program has had tremendous success for the last couple of decades. And, you know, I felt very confident that I could come in there with everything that I've learned. I wasn't going to just come back home and not be prepared. I wasn't going to come back home and just say, hey, everybody, like, kid coming home from school. Hey, where's dinner? Where's all this? I had it all lined up for me, and I'm just going to go hang out on the couch. No, I wanted to come back home, and I wanted to be prepared. I wanted to, bring in a very tight coaching staff that cares about the student-athletes and that has a strong growth mindset. I wanted to enhance the coaches. I wanted to enhance the student-athlete experience. I want to continue to pour into the community. The amount of knowledge that I've acquired over the years in data and analytics, I wanted to bring that to the table as well. But, you know, do it the right way so that you're not creating too much noise and distracting from the real thing and creating men and competitors. A unique transition. Everyone, it seems like a lot of people are going from college to professional baseball, and I went from professional baseball to college baseball. But, you know, having, I think that's a great thing, having seen what it's like in both worlds. so I can better prepare these young men that come here to Oregon State on how to be prepared for that next step. And just coming to them with, hey guys, let me talk to you about professional baseball. Let me talk to you about not just getting a piece of paper to hang on your wall, but learning how to build that wall itself. It's not just the degree, it's the comprehension that you get from that education, how you're going to apply it later on in life. And I wanted to bring all these things together. I do feel at the collegiate level, this is the time in their lives, you know, from 18, 19, 20, 21 year old, that you can really start to transform them. When I myself went through some of the hardest things, you know, thus far in life, and had a great support system here with Jess Lewis and our coaching staff and my brothers in the clubhouse, transformed my life. I want to give that same experience back year in and year out. And being around these young men that we have here right now is special. And what, you know, what a wild turn of a year it was for everyone around the world. But, you know, still, like, we're doing anything and everything we can right now. It's about what we can do. And we're constantly searching for those cans and applying them to our day to day, getting better each and every day. It's a day of optimism. It's not a day of sorrow and woe is me. And I think that, you know, that's part of that journey that I've been a part of over the years, being around uplifting people, being about people that value each and every day and value family and life. And really, I feel like I was prepared. I wouldn't have taken this or pursued this position if I didn't feel I was, you know, really prepared to come in, because I love this program so stinking much that it needs to be in the best hands possible. So I want to take on that responsibility and do everything I can to protect it and to make it thrive.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, I don't think there's anybody better to kind of carry the torch, so to speak, up there. And I had a chance to watch you guys play before, you know, everybody got shut down and everybody had to go home. You know, I had a chance to watch you guys play down in San Diego. I mean, got a good squad, man. What I really appreciated, and, you know, I like to sit back and watch sometimes, and like I said, but I really appreciated, and it was you know, Coach Bailey, you know, just going by, because we had a bunch of little guys from our baseball program there, right, just kind of watching the game, and just appreciate you guys just taking, you know, a little bit of time as you're, you know, walking by, just kind of talk and fraternize with the kids, and you know, just, you know, the purpose of this podcast and why I guess my vision for it for now, at least for the immediacy, is to, you know, provide some type of direction and some type of, you know, information for young players so that they know kind of what to expect from, you know, depending on what level they're at, you know, the high school level, the college level, and even the professional level, if that's in the cards for them, but, you know, how to transition. And I think there's some common, you know, misconceptions about, you know, how this journey is supposed to go for everybody, you know. And, you know, I'm going to reiterate this again, like I have in past episodes, about how, you know, kids who, you know, they're pretty good at like 13, 14 years old. And, you know, so naturally, you know, the parent's going to think, oh shoot, my kid's the best player on this team. He's the best player on that team. You know, he's going to be a big leaguer, you know? And so they, you know, they just naturally just assume, you know, that, you know, they're going to go to varsity baseball and to college ball and then get drafted and move on to the, you know, to the big leagues. And it never goes that way. You know, I don't know if you know Donegal Fergus, but he said, you know, once you, in a previous episode, he said, once you start, you know, planning out your career, you know, it's never going to work out the way you planned, you know? And as a player, you just kind of think, okay, well, professional baseball is what you want. And then all of a sudden, you know, you got injured, know, you just you don't pan out to be you know, as good as you thought you were going to be, you know, whatever it may be, right? It just there's so many obstacles and so much adversity to overcome that, you know, sometimes it really isn't in the card. I mean, most of the time it's not in the cards for you to get to the big leagues. It's tough to get to, you know, it's tough to get to professional baseball to begin with, let alone, you know, getting to the cracking the roster at the highest level, you know. So, but what you, like you said, like embracing that process and trusting that, you know, and enjoying the journey. And I think that's so important because I didn't realize how much as a player that I learned, in regards to, you know, life lessons, so to speak, that has nothing to do with like the fundamental play of baseball, but what baseball taught me and the experiences that I had, you know, it's brought me to where I'm at now and how, you know, and what my standards are for, you know, certain things that I want in my life or that I want to bring into my life. And so, you know, again, like you know, you're one of those guys, I think that they're going to be so, you're going to be so impactful. I mean, you, even though your playing career is over, you know, you're not coaching your professional baseball anymore. I still think your best baseball, you know, in your best time in baseball is still ahead of you. And I mean, you can't really say that about everybody, but I really think that about you because that's the type of character you have, and that was really easy to pick up on, you know, in the short time I was around you as a player. But real quick, we're kind of going over time. If we can just touch on some recruiting stuff for a few minutes, if that's okay, and just kind of go over, you know, like, so, you know, guys, I mean, obviously, you know, there's not a whole lot of opportunity for guys to get out and play, any opportunity for guys to go out and play right now, really. What can, like, to play at Oregon State and to do, you know, to be at a program like yours, and to be a part of that, you know, obviously, like, the 2020 grads, they're having a hard time just figuring out where a lot of the uncommitted guys are trying to figure out where they're going to go in the fall. But, you know, we have 21s, 2022s. These are all, you know, juniors, sophomores, freshmen, right? And you guys are one of the programs that kind of target players early, you know, identify players early. So if we could just talk about the recruiting process on your guys' end and what that looks like, and, you know, what players and families can kind of prepare for, if Oregon State's, you know, on their radar as a possible, you know, place they want to be at.
Yeah. Well, the key is, again, think about keeping my focus on what you can do. And, you know, there may not be a season happening right now, and there may not be a season happening this summer. Who knows? But the key is to be prepared for all those things so that if something does open up, if an opportunity at a school opens up, you are prepared to have the conversation or to go compete at the highest level at that workout and show that you're ready for that spot to happen. Right now, there's still, you know, a lot of questions. What's going to happen with the Major League draft? Which guys are going to go and which guys are not going to go? You know, and that's going to create some movement across all levels of college baseball. And then you also think about everyone getting the extra year. You know, there are actually a lot of people out there that, you know, are really struggling financially. And I've seen it with student athletes where mom and dad are not able to work and they're trying to work as well. And they're starting to even make that transition in life of, hey, you know, baseball is baseball. And maybe I need to prepare. I need to be here to help my family. So maybe I'm not going to play. There's going to be all kinds of effects from this, this shutdown that mean, you know, so much for families trying to put a roof over their head and food on the table. But, you know, really right now, I see a ton of guys out there still working extremely hard, you know, setting up targets for their bullpen, trying to increase their command. I've heard of student athletes that have like a 5-field rotation. They'll go to one, and once they get kicked off, they go to the next one. And then they get kicked off, and they go to the next one. You know, they have their options open on how can I get my work in rather than, well, that's not able to do anything. I probably should stay up all night playing video games and sleep in the next day. Like, this is a wild opportunity for so many people, because you're going to tell, like, when stuff hits the fan, how do people respond? And the people who responded the best during this time are going to set themselves up, or at least have the opportunity down the road to be in the best position to move forward. Whereas other people are taking huge steps back right now. And they put their head down. They ain't looking out. And woe is me. No, that's not the time for that. There's some people who did it for a few days. Some people did it for a few weeks. Some people are still doing it. And what I see, and I get encouraged by, when I'm having conversations on the phone with you know, prospective student athletes and their families, and, well, how's it going? And the people that are optimistic, people say, oh, I got this and this going on, this, that. Those are the conversations I really look forward to. I can tell that there's a bright future. Like you said, it, regardless of if you make it to the big league, so many people are sitting there talking about, I want to get the pro ball. What does that mean? Like, just, you just want to make it there? For what? The title? Or do you want to make it to the big leagues, or D1, or whatever the case may be? How often do people chase titles? And is that the right thing to do? You know, if you're in the minor league, if you're an A ball, where do you want to be? Double A. If you're in Double A, where do you want to be? Triple A. Yeah, Triple A, don't be in the big leagues. The big leagues, you want to be an all-star. If you're an all-star, you want to get paid. If you're paid, you want to be a Hall of Famer. Like, it just goes and goes and goes. But for you, for me, for many others that did not play in the big leagues, does that mean that we're less of a person? No. Did we work our tails off every day and try to maximize the talent? Yes. We should feel great about that and keep pushing forward. Yeah. And, you know, for every student athlete that's out there right now, things are going to get moved around quite a bit, and there's going to be some surprises here and there. I think, you know, with Major League Baseball making some decisions and probably shutting down some clubs, you know, there's going to be less guys playing professional baseball. More guys are going to be sticking around, but in the college ranks, and it's going to shuffle things, sure. But you talk about, why do you play baseball? And if you really love the game, and that's why you're playing it, and you love to compete, then you got to find the right spot for you to develop as a human being. Go seek out those coaches. I mean, we look forward to those conversations. Yeah, I mean, right now there's student athletes out there doing a great job posting videos and of the work they're doing, of their velocity, of their breaking pitches, and they're using technology to do it. And right now we're getting a lot of emails of people reaching out, seeing how things are going. And, you know, reality is, you want to get out and see people compete and enjoy the conversations, and it's prepping for that. Some student athletes are doing a great job prepping for that next piece. Mm-hmm. Like, we've already built a strong relationship talking on the phone and through emails and a lot of Q&A. And then it's, okay, now watch me compete. When that opportunity comes, there's going to be, possibilities of good opportunities. And our big thing is, finding the right people. Yes, the athletic ability to play here is very high. You need to have some special tools. But, we also look at being a strong student. I am very adamant. If you do not go to class, you do not come to practice. It is respect out of for your family, for yourself, for your brothers in the clubhouse, for the community, then you go to class, you make the most out of that degree. Okay? And then also the character piece. Yeah. I'm looking for competitive people. I'm looking for people that are have the ability to be truth tellers, that love to be held accountable and want to be pushed in the right direction. I'm looking for those people that are wanting to be a Beav and bought into our family, our values, our philosophy. Those are all important pieces. So it's looking at all of those buckets. It's you know, the character piece, it's the student piece, and the athletic ability. And, you know, if those all check off, now we just have to make sure that there's the right need in that position. Or can we see you making a transition, much like I made, from one position to another? You know, you want to have, if you have that, those puzzle pieces, you want to get that person in your program. But I'm also very cautious not to be, not to overreach and overcommit, because the guys that are here on campus with us, I want them to be able to go out there and compete. I want them to be able to get a lot of attention from the coaches. I want them to be able to get a lot of reps. My advice to everyone would be that focus on what you can do and be prepared for the opportunity to open up.
Yeah. Well, I think that's, you know, those are all really great. That's really great advice and good points that you've made. And I think a lot of times that, you know, at least, you know, parents and players don't know what to expect as they're moving up in the you know, in the youth ranks. So they're just trying, you know, everybody wants the best for themselves and their kids. And, you know, so all this information that you gave, man, like everything you've put out there over the last 40 minutes or so has been, you know, invaluable. And, you know, there's a lot of guys out there that know baseball, right? And there's a lot of guys out there that can teach that, but it takes a really, you know, a really special person to be able to relate that to, you know, everything that, you know, you have to face on off the field, you know. Or so, you know, I think, again, you know, I want to thank you for being here and taking the time. We're a little bit over, you know, that half hour mark that, you know, I told you we'd be at, so you can get back to your family and hang out and have a fun day with them. But, yeah, I, you know, thanks again. And I want to, you know, I want to wish you all the best and with your program. And I mean, and I'll be following you, as I was before the quarantine life began. And, you know, I encourage that, you know, the listeners, the people listening in, that you guys, you know, if you don't know a whole lot about Oregon State, do your research on it. There's a lot of tradition there, rich in tradition. And it's one of the, to me, one of the most, you know, renowned championship programs, in recent history, you know. So, just super proud you were able to land that gig over there, and I know you're going to do a great job. You know, so thanks again, man. Appreciate it.
So, Joe, always great, get a chance to connect with you, my man. I look forward to our next conversation, and I don't think that between you and I, we could ever lock in and say, hey, we're going to talk for this long and never go over. We're always going to go over that time slot if you and I get to connect.
That's awesome, man. So, all right, guys, well, that's pretty much it. And, you know, I really, you know, if you've made it all the way through this, and I hope you did, you know, pat yourself on the back, but also, if you can, just take time, hit the subscribe button. If you haven't done so yet, leave a review and a rating if you can. It only takes like 5-10 seconds to, you know, say something nice to somebody. So if you can do it on one of these platforms on Apple or Spotify, that'd be awesome, man. And I really appreciate you guys listening in, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Pitch taken, strike three called, and the Beavers are the national champions again. Mitch Canham said there's only one dog pile a year, and it's right here for the second straight year at Rosenblatt Stadium. The Beavers have won back-to-back national championships.
One of the greatest moments in the history of Oregon State athletics. My ball to left center field.
I'ma take it back and I'ma dust off my cleats again. Got them OG ballers on the team again. But ain't nobody bigger than the team defend. Our home turf, come to God, so we gon' piece them in. It's been a minute since Canham rocked the double ones. And Corvallis threw a back-to-back number ones. But it's much deeper than dog days and bubble gum. Trying to build a culture and watch the trophies double up. From the backyard to the sandlot, the county park to the inner cities and black tops. To a kid, anything is a backstop. Dreaming of a dog pile, Rosenblatt the backdrop. Yeah, so Beaver Nation, stand up. Everybody get your hands up. We gon' scream until your voice gone. Rockin' that black and orange, it's time to put our boys on.
O-State ballers, yes, we ballin'. O-State ballers, yes, we ballin'. O-State, O-State ballers. Top of the Pac-12, cause we do it so well. O-State ballers, yes, we ballin'. O-State ballers, yes, we ballin'. O-State, O-State ballers. Hittin' all the jacks, ain't no time to relax.
two in the pen. The pressure's on, you calm, came to do it again. Ain't no fear in your heart, you ready to touch all bases. And basically you break it down to the basics. The coach make the call, players make the move. The pillars that we stand on define what we do. The process has been established. Do the right thing, remain selfless, and always take advantage of a missed fastball, watch them all panic. Double down the line, run the scoring in tandem. More than a team, we your family straight mashing. Controlling the zone, composure poised in all aspects. One door pilot, here remains the passion. Best believe we men of action, we make it happen. The orange and black beavers on the attack. About the name on the front, not the name on the back. O-State ballers, yes we ballin'. O-State ballers, yes we ballin'. O-State, O-State ballers. Top of the Pac-12, cause we do it so well. O-State ballers, yes we ballin'. O-State ballers, yes we ballin'. O-State, O-State ballers. Hittin' on the tracks, ain't no time to relax. Can you see the fire in our eyes? Willing to put it on the line.
Leads the team. This one is deep. This one is deep. This one is
let nothing slow us down.
It's 19. And Oregon State rises to the top.
Beavers a strike away and out away from the national championship. Kevin Abel trying to finish it here. The 3-2 pitch on the way. Fastball taken. Strike three call. And for the third time in the modern era, it is my joy and honor to say the Beavers are the national champions.